Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone! Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is the official Covering the Corner podcast, episode 196. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, talk about some meatballs, some things the Guardians did over this week in baseball. Talk about Tristan McKenzie. Is he the ace of the Guardians staff now? Talk about Franmil Reyes. Is definitely not the ace of the Guardians. Anything. Lineup, DH, DH, defense, anything. He's been DFA'd, claimed by the Cubs today. I'll talk about that. The Guardians stayed pat at the deadline. What does that mean for them going forward? And how did it happen? How could they possibly have not added anything? We'll just talk about what they've done there. And some more rookie debuts in the last week. They kind of stayed true to the claim that they were seeing who they had this year by debuting three rookies since the deadline. Hunter Gaddis, Will Benson, Tyler Freeman have all come up and played at least one game with, we'll call them mixed results so far. It's very limited, but two of those three have not looked great. But we'll talk about them and how they can be effective going forward. And joining me for all that and more, another Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I'm great. I got nothing.
That's good. I was thinking.
Yeah. I'm a dream over here, I guess. Yeah.
Just over this in baseball blissland, right? Nothing.
Having a good day. After this podcast, I might go and watch 2001: A Space Odyssey. Never seen it before. And
you've never seen 2001: A Space Odyssey?
No. You know what? It's amazing. My current favorite podcast, not this one, unfortunately, Blank Check. Cool. They're starting to do Stanley Kubrick movies. They do filmographies of various directors, and they're doing Kubrick. And I realized I've seen most of his movies, except for Barry Lyndon and 2001: A Space Odyssey. So,
well, there you go.
I figure might as well. What the heck? I got nothing else going on tonight. I mean, yeah.
It's so weird that we're in obviously 2001. We're way past it, but we're in the time where in the past they thought this was the distant future. Because didn't we pass RoboCop a while ago too?
I believe we're in RoboCop. Place. Maybe this year, and then we have Terminator 2 Judgment Day in about 7 years.
Soon. So, yeah. George Jetson was born this year. The Back to the Future Day was like half a decade ago.
That was last year, I think. Oh, no, was that only 2016?
No, that was a long time ago. He went forward to like 2015.
That's right. Okay, yeah, 2015 passed already. So we really got to get some new future movies that are a bit more. And then you watch like older ones, even like. Like Soylent Green, like, you know, that was like 1996 or something like that. Or
Far distant future.
You know, I mean, the fun one is, and, you know, people make comments about this after Donald Trump revealed his idea for fixing the homeless population and moving them all out to camps outside of cities, was we have the whatever riots of 2024 from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, which triggered everything else going on there. So, you know, we have a... Got a lot of cool stuff going on.
I think the 2020 just sounded futuristic in 50 years ago.
It does. It still feels like the future.
Yeah.
Like when we talk about 2030, I'm like, that's forever from now.
We're never going to get there. It's impossible.
It's in the impossible future of wonder. Like, what are we doing here? Yeah.
You know what else is impossible and wonderful, Merritt?
I do.
It's meatballs. It doesn't work when you say you know. You're supposed to catch you by surprise. But yeah, this is our meatball section where, of course, we talk about just drilling down specific things the Guardians did over the last week. Mine this week is Ahmed Rosario. I feel like I owe him one after so long, basically treating him as a guy who's going to be here and then immediately gone at the first chance. But he's not. He's here. He sticks around. I think it's good. I think he's played a lot better recently. And we talked about last week proving to be a clubhouse guy. And he deserves to stick around. And he also beat the piss out of a baseball this week. So that's also fun. He hit a slider off the D-backs on Wednesday, 450 feet, the longest of his career. Straightaway center field, it was very Jim Thome-esque where that ball went. There's a lot of Jim Thome home runs that disappeared in the bushes back there in Progressive Field. That was the longest of his career, longest of this year, obviously, but barely the longest of this year. He also hit one 447 feet off Austin Gomer in June. I didn't realize that apparently Amed Rosario once in a while will crush the shit out of a baseball, and he's done it. One other thing that just kind of came up trying to find his hardest hit balls. There's nothing remarkable about the speed that he hits. Usually he's around like 110 is his hardest, but 7 of his 12 hardest hit balls have been off sliders. I thought that was kind of interesting. Most are off the into the dirt, but still, I mean, he hits sliders hard somehow. I don't know if it's just he's better at timing those up than other things, or it's just pure coincidence over 1 year. But a lot of times this year he's hit sliders. That the one that went 450 was a slider off a rookie pitcher, but he crushed that one. Amed Rosario, just like Andrés Giménez before him when I doubted him forever, I feel like I owe Rosario for doubting him for so long, and now he's going to stick around at least for this year, and then maybe we'll go back to he needs to be traded in the offseason, depending on how Tyler Freeman does, which we'll talk about later. But for now, Amed Rosario is looking really good.
It's wild because as you started talking about it, I just figured I'd call up his stats. Last year he hit 282, 321, 409. This year he's hitting 286, 320, 410. And it's just like, I don't know. I guess we're just prisoners of the moment a little bit. But
it feels like he's just this all-world player right now in last year.
And then you dig even deeper. Like, exit velocity, same. Hard hit rate, actually lower this year than last year. Line drive rate, 1 point higher than last year. Ground ball rate, also higher. Fly ball rate, lower. So, like, again, this is not to say it's a bad thing. Having league average hitters is good. And I think the thing, you know, we've pilloried him the most for is his defense, which has been, I mean, literally worlds infinitely better than it was last year. I mean, you can measure, but also, like, he was a negative influence by defensive wins above replacement last year. He is a full win above replacement. Just defensively. And they were talking about that even on the broadcast. I think it was Saturday or Sunday. I can't remember which one it was. He's going to the ground more often this year than he did in the past, which you can deal with a guy being a slightly above league average, like a guy with a 730 OPS at shortstop if he's good defensively. And his issue was he was not because he didn't want to get dirty or whatever.
I would hope that wasn't it.
And then he's funny. He's like, no, dirty. No. I like to look sharp out here. I come up. I oil my beard every day. If I get dirt in there, it just sticks. It's a real hassle. but they were talking about that. The Sarbaugh has talked to him about laying out for plays more, and he's had a few spectacular plays. Now I will say, the Cleveland the Guardians Twitter account tweeted out like Amed Rosario best shortstop in baseball, and I was like, no,
no.
But he isn't. I will admit, you know, like you, I have said some less than complimentary things about him and his glove. I
believe the word rock hand Rosario was.
I believe I actually used stone hands, which was stupid, obviously. That's why we have editors in this world. You got to have the alliteration of rock hands Rosario.
There you go.
But, you know, yeah, he's been great. I will agree with some comments I've seen on Twitter about I don't think he's a – you know what he is? Is he is such like a 1969 – type of number two hitter, right? Low walk, high contact, a lot of speed kind of a guy. Like you get him, like you get your leadoff guy on and then you get a hit and run situation going on before your sluggers come up. But like, he's something good. I mean, he's by again, you know, I know we all hate to cite wins above replacement in the middle of the season, but he is third on the team in that exact statistic and their fifth best hitter at this point. Well, that's sixth best. Actually, yeah, that feels me. If he's your sixth best hitter, I feel pretty good about things.
Yeah.
So
I didn't realize until you said it how purely similar he is to last. Like his slash is exactly the same.
Even beyond that, man.
Like, he's really the only difference, I guess.
All the stats, like home run rate, walk rate's actually lower, but so is his strikeout rate. So I don't know. But yeah, he's mashed a few of them this year. And I think this, like, he's exactly the type of player you hold on to. If they're going to hold on to him, I would be okay with them holding on to him even if they could somehow get him through 2024. Because then you'd get the absolute best out of him. Because he's going to, like, his, you know, speed being what it is. And even before this, I know we were talking about the Trey Turner trade and how that still pissed me off with the Nationals. How I assume their rationale was, oh, he's a speed first guy. That'll fall off. And he's hitting like 340 with the Dodgers and just mashing home runs and stuff. And it's just purely excellent in every single facet of the game. But Rosario being such a speed guy, as his number one thing, I suppose, that's definitely going to tail off as he gets older. if they could keep him, I mean, they have him through his age 27 season. Assuming they don't trade him this offseason, which, considering the logjam that we are still dealing with in the minors and in the middle infield and all these guys being, who just got promoted? Oh, he's an outfielder. Never mind. Well, Larry just got promoted. But they have all these other young guys coming up who play in the middle infield, including who we're going to talk about in a few minutes, with Freeman and some other guys who are kind of knocking on the door. I think it makes the most sense kind of at this point, hold on to him through next year. Just kind of let him walk, and which I'd be completely fine with, honestly. I don't think even if you trade him in the offseason, you're going to get any big thing back. And the fact that they have, what, 9 guys now in MLB's top 100 prospects, which is more than I think the entire AL Central combined.
It's ridiculous.
It's truly wild. The bevy of riches they have, and assuming 2 of those guys hit, I'm assuming that that'll be the number we get. And then some of these other guys who are just going to be fun surprises. But yeah, he hit dingers hard. And
he hit them very far.
So right now we're getting the best out of him. Yeah.
Yeah. What's your meatball this week?
We're going to get esoteric again, as with all my meatballs. Tristan McKenzie had a great start against the Astros on Sunday. Matt, so I'm going to pick a year, and it's not arbitrary. It's the first year they had a winning season as they rebuilt, so 2015. This is the, according to StatHead/Baseball References, game score, which is a stat we like to cite. I think it's a pretty good rough descriptor of how well someone pitched. It is literally the 10th best pitched game against the Astros since 2015. Not only that, it's the best non-complete game pitched against them since 2015. I mean, he absolutely killed them. 2 hits, 8 strikeouts. I don't know, man. 1 walk. Literally 3 base runners against what is the best offensive team in baseball, or at least in the American League and probably in baseball. I don't know. I think he lucked out a little bit. Did Alvarez hit that day or play that day? I'll look right now.
He pinched. But, hit, or Yordan Alvarez, I think, did. But Jose Altuve.
The fact that he held Yordan Alvarez to an 0-for-3, which, if you go back and watch the game, he got a little bit lucky. Alvarez did tee off in a few of those. But, like, I don't know, man. He only had to face Kyle Tucker once. He only had to face Altuve once. But everyone else was in there. Bregman was in there. Mancini was in there. Pena was in there. McCormick was in there even. You know, they still had some guys in there, and he just silenced them. And this is not a rare thing. I think, I don't know if it was you or whoever's running the account when they mentioned it, but he's had several starts like this against great offensive teams. And a lot of some of his luck-based, obviously, because he's given up some fly balls that don't go over the fence, and balls hit right at hitters, or at fielders, rather. But he was just so good on... What was that, Sunday? Saturday? Sunday.
Yeah, that was the Sunday one, yeah.
He was just so good on Sunday, and it's like, every time I watch him, I'm baffled by it, because, like with everyone else on the staff, he doesn't have, like, any one thing, and he's a 3-pitch pitcher, ostensibly, but he continues to just be good. I think he'll probably finish the season with, like, with an ERA under 3.30. Yeah,
remember, if he does that over 160 innings, too, he gets a Rolex from Marcus Stroman. That was before the season. Stroman tweeted at him, if you get, I think it was like a 3.7 ERA and so many innings, I'll buy you a Rolex. And now he's on.
He is getting that Rolex.
Like, he is absolutely at this point, getting that Rolex.
His next start's going to be against Toronto. Damn, yeah. That's going to be he'd get a Tigers one in there or something like that. Toronto in Rogers, like it's in Toronto too, which is kind of a bummer. But he's been great. I don't know. It's just it's near as many strikeouts as walks or as innings pitched. His ability to suppress hits at this point is not a thing. Like, do you remember, it was in like 2013 or 2014, a big deal was made with, what was his name? Matt? He was a pitcher on the Giants. This is going to bug the crap out of me now. I can't remember his name.
Matt Moore?
No, the big meatball looking one. Oh my God.
What?
Matt Cain. Matt Cain had this, yes, thank you. He had this preternatural ability to like suppress hits or home runs rather, for like 6 or so years. Like he just wouldn't give up home runs. And, eventually things, the worm turned and he got beat up a little bit. he got old. But I don't know, McKenzie's ability to just suppress hits is wild. Like, 6.2 hits per 9 is like Cy Young Kershaw level of hits per 9 sort of a thing. And, I don't know what's doing it, but he's doing it. So, you have 194 over 281 innings pitched, 194 average against him. So, luck is important sometimes. Better be lucky than good. So,
one thing I liked about that game, too, against the Astros was There were so many ground outs he got, which isn't something he usually does. He has like a 32% ground ball rate, which is not very high. He's definitely a fly ball pitcher, which I think comes along with not having dominating stuff. Like, he's not getting a bunch of stuff low in the zone and getting ground balls, but he got a bunch that game. He's on pace for a Maddux at one point. He was super close by the end, if not still on pace by the time the game was over. I can't remember, but yeah, he was really close to it. And then the I think the tweet you're thinking of was when I said that there were two games where he had seven or more innings and a shutout, I think it was. And the other one was against the Yankees when he allowed one hit and seven strikeouts.
He said three of them now, one against the Tigers and then one against the two best teams in the American League, basically. Yeah.
The three, if you include the great Tigers, which, of
course. Well, you know, I mean, they're finished rebuilding, as we were discussing earlier. You know, I mean,
totally
the rebuild is over, baby. this is the Tigers unleashed. So, yeah.
But yeah, it was impressive to see McKenzie like that. They even joked on the broadcast because it was the guy from the White Sox that everybody loves, Jason Benetti, I think is his name.
Oh, yeah.
Rick Manning was there, and it just sounded so out of place, not with Matt Underwood. And then some third guy, I think it was an Astros announcer. It was hearing Rick Manning, complete aside, but hearing Rick Manning just in another broadcast is so weird. But they were joking that he was telling, didn't you tell us he was a fly ball pitcher or something? Because he just got so many ground outs in a row against the Astros. It was insane how he did that. Mm-hmm. But that'd be something, I think, if he can shift to that somehow, unless it was just pure coincidence. Like, if he's also getting ground balls and not walking a ton of people, he's going to be like you said, an amazing pitcher, the rate he's going, which leads us into the next topic we already had planned, was just, is he the ace of the staff at this point? I mean, he's had these great games in a row. I mean, he had a couple rough ones against the Diamondbacks and the Red Sox, but he's had a bunch.
Everyone does,
yeah. I mean, he had that streak in July where it was just three shutouts in a row and looked completely dominant, one against the White Sox, one run in five innings. So, I mean, is he the one? I don't think it's, I guess maybe it could still be Shane Bieber. He's still been pretty good, but it's not Zach Plesac. It's not Aaron Civale, it's not Cal Quantrill. So is it Tristan McKenzie at this point?
That's a great question. And honestly, after I mentioned it to you in planning this podcast, I was thinking about it all day.
Thank you for acknowledging. Great question.
Also, I'm thinking back even, it was the second to last year that Bauer was on the team. I think it must have been 2018, right?
Yeah.
And like, he was better statistically in basically every measure. That's the year I think he broke his wrist, I suppose. Yeah, because he was in Cy Young contention that year, and then he broke his – he had the batted ball off his arm. He was better in every statistic than Corey Kluber, but I don't think there was a single moment of that year where I would say – and the term ace is, you know, nebulous and doesn't really mean anything. Like, every team has a quote-unquote ace, and most teams don't have one, right? Like, it's – there was a point there where I feel like Cleveland had – three, honestly, like they just had many horses, I suppose.
I mean, it felt like four at one point, right? Bauer, Clevinger, Carrasco was four aces.
But like, insane. I think it's obviously a big part of it is performance, but a part of it is like vibes too, right? Like, if I ask you right now, who is the ace of the New York Yankees?
The ace of the Yankees?
Yeah. Would you say like, Gerrit Cole?
Well, yeah, Gerrit Cole. There you go.
Yeah, he is their third best pitcher by most metrics. Nestor Cortez is their best pitcher right now.
That would make sense. But yeah, I wouldn't think of him as the ace because you think of Gerrit Cole as
right. Exactly.
He really blows up once every three games, but other than that, he's fine.
Right. So like, I think part of the role of an ace is also, I think,
being an ace.
It's a leadership aspect too, right? It's like. Putting down the flag and saying we all have to go here. This is the level we need to perform at. And if you don't perform at this level, then you're not as good as me. And I think to some degree, Bieber has been that voice, at least in hearing from interviews and stuff. And obviously, as that Cy Young, I'd still give him the nod, even though, I mean, you go down the numbers and outside of strikeout rate and walk rate, he is worse in every single way than McKenzie. Right? He's even pitched less innings. I guess one last, you know, I mean, I think McKenzie pitched a little bit in relief. That's what kind of did that. But, like, I don't know. I don't think McKenzie has put himself that far ahead, I guess, of Bieber would be the only other challenger to the title. Putting that far ahead of Shane Bieber as far as just output and talent. You look at things like fielding independent pitching. Bieber is a full run better than him just in terms of advanced metrics. So, at this point, in terms of like results metrics, it's a flip of the coin, and I'd still have to give it to Bieber only because of you still have to factor in a little bit of what's happened in the past, but also they're so close, I guess. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think Bieber still is probably the ace of the staff, which it's weird that he has a 3.39 ERA this year, and all we've been talking about is, oh, he's not the same anymore. He's not the same Shane Bieber, but he's still also extremely very good. We just got to remember he's never going to be 2020 when he's – how many of his 12 starts were against AL Central? So, I mean, it wasn't the hardest stretch, but he's not too much worse than last year. He's just a different pitcher, and I think it's probably still Shane Bieber. But I think Tristan McKenzie can get there. I think he'll probably stick around longer than Bieber if Bieber doesn't sign an extension. So I think it won't be long until Tristan McKenzie is the guy, which alone is just an amazing thing. I mean, for a while there, we didn't think he would be in the majors at all because he had injury issues and he just didn't pitch for a little while. But yeah, he's looked amazing. And I think it's fun just there's a guy you can't really point to anything that he's dominant about, but he just is, which is, I think, a fun thing to have once in a while, like you have in Tristan McKenzie. But it'll be fun, like, if they make the playoffs. Like, but Bieber, McKenzie, I guess that's it. But Bieber, McKenzie.
Quantrill. I think Quantrill's a good. Terrible, but... Well, I mean, just for how good their infield defense has become. And
yeah, it's a good 1-2 for sure, either way.
Quantrill obviously is a total throwback pitcher in terms of just being a ground ball heavy guy. Like, we don't see many of those. But
he's
in this era.
Less this year, too. His ground balls are less than they have in the true. Past, which is weird.
But a guy like that, even so, is so useful in the postseason because of how home run happy the postseason gets. By the way, I think it was all of his starts against the AL and NL Central, talking about Bieber in 2020. So it's just
You still got to be good, but I mean.
That's the thing. I go get just 2021, 2022, 36 starts. It's still at 3.29 ERA. Like, he's always. That is the obvious outlier year, and then everything else is just like, yeah, he's a pretty good pitcher. Like, he's a pretty good pitcher.
Yeah, definitely an ace and a really good pitcher, I think Bieber is.
Yeah, I'll be honest, though. I really don't know if Tristan McKenzie will ever be able to, whether informally or formally, seize that title simply because of what's coming. Like, if Espino is the real deal, like, he's just the guy. Like, he's immediately
going to steamroll through it, yeah.
There comes a point where, oh, the new guy, he can't be the ace. He throws 97 and his slider like breaks knees. Like, oh, all right, never mind then. So long then. This is your hat, sir.
You're now the ace. Congratulations. Yeah, I think that's going to be true. I mean, like, that one, maybe Gavin Williamson comes up and he might be super good. So, I mean, there's going to be a lot of great pitchers coming up again. But
and that's the thing. Like, McKenzie's still so young. Like, all the guys in the booth, and I know we've all talked about it. Like, he's still just a three-pitch pitcher. And it's fastball, curve, slider. If he can figure out a changeup, which apparently he does have, he just never throws it in game because he's just still trying to figure out what he has. He could be an incredibly lethal pitcher. Like, you'd be able to get everyone out all the time. And just watching him kind of learn and grow, it's a thing that I forgot how much fun it was to see. Just thinking back to like the 2013, 2014, 2015 seasons, the growth of a pitcher over time. I think someone like Carrasco is a perfect example of that. And I think his arc is what I want out of McKenzie, I suppose, is just he gets his chances, he pitches well, he figures out what he's good at, and he continues to do that more and more and more. Carrasco was great because he had like five pitches at his best, but what made him really effective was he realized his slider was an absolute killer, and so he threw that more and more and more, and his fastball is still pretty good, and all that everything else kind of bled off that. But I'm excited to watch him grow. Again, 25, he's going to be around for quite a little while.
Until free agent until 2027. So
yeah, exactly.
As long as they pay him, he'll be here at least till then. If they don't sign him to an extension,
well, and honestly, I wouldn't mind if they could figure out a way to keep Bieber around. Like, just for even if he's like a fourth best pitcher. Like, honestly, if you're 3-4-5 once the guy from the minors hit and you're 3-4-5 or McKenzie, Bieber, Quantrill, that's pretty good, and I'll take that any day of the week. So
oh, for sure, yeah. So another thing happened this week. I don't know if you saw, but
what?
Franmil Reyes has been DFA. I think we talked about him before the deadline as somebody who might be traded, and we thought that was weird. Like, just the feeling of he might be traded. How about hearing Franmil Reyes designated for assignment by the Guardians?
What a weird thing to see. Wasn't it weird?
I can't think of another like player that was so good 1 year. Wasn't injured, and the next year was just bad enough to DFA. And he's not expensive. I mean, he's going to hit arbitration, so he'll be paid something. But it's not like he's going to have a huge salary with negative WAR in the arbitration. So, I mean, he wasn't going to be bank busting. I think this was purely just they didn't think it would fit. I don't know what the thing is. There was a lot of talk now recently about they wanted to lose weight and play the outfield, which I mean, that I think that's something like I'm willing to take their word on that, because that'd be kind of something heinous to make up about somebody. That like, I get these are mindless, soulless corporations, but if you're just making up that this guy didn't want to do it, that's kind of a weird thing to just make up and put out there. So I kind of believe him that he just didn't want to be in the outfield. He just liked DHing. Maybe that's fine, and maybe that'll work somewhere, and he can be DH on the Cubs, who claimed him. But the Guardians, as we know, they like versatility. They like players who are willing to play multiple positions. And if he doesn't want to play any, he doesn't want to get in better shape, which could also maybe help him hit and react to pitches better, then maybe it's better he goes and tries and fits on with the Cubs. But I'm not going to be – this is going to be like Jesus Aguilar for me. If he goes and succeeds somewhere, like, okay, they gave him a shot. It didn't work here. It worked there, whatever. It's I get it. But, yeah, he was just claimed by the Cubs today, and he was DFA'd last week, and it feels weird.
It was just such an abrupt cut bait, and it's just a thing you don't see. Just seeing the guys that hung around over the last many years of this team, it's like, what the hell? Like, but to your point, right? Like the lack of versatility, I think that something probably happened behind the scenes, quite honestly, with him just saying, no, I won't do this. But also the emergence of Josh Naylor, I think, like his growth, like, it is really under discussed the leap he has made from year 20, from last year to this, especially considering his horrible injury. Like, he's literally just, you look at his numbers, exactly what we were hoping Reyes would be this year, like as far as batting average, on base percentage, and slugging. Like, I don't know, if you prorated his numbers out to a full season as he is right now, he'd be basically a 30 run home run guy, and he walks more, and he has better contact rates than Reyes does. So I think the emergence of him combined with just probably something in the back end and a need to, I guess one thing you have to think about, right? Like we talked about before, we mentioned before how strong the farm system is. They have all these guys who are, top 100 prospects in one way or another. Not all of them are position players. I think two or three of them are pitchers. But even beyond that, then they have other guys who are not top 100 prospects, who have been performed decently well. I mean, guys like Oscar Gonzalez or whoever else, like Nolan Jones obviously was a top prospect. We'll talk about him in a bit, but with Benson and Freeman, everything like that, like they need to see what they have. Like I think part of it is we kind of forgot that this is still a bit of a rebuilding year. And I don't know. It wasn't working. He just can't make contact. Like we talked about several times about how, when he makes contact, he obliterates the baseball. But he made contact so little, and it just seemed, I don't know whether it was in his own head or he just missed and lost a step or something. But
and it was just a surprising
cut. I don't know. Just so unceremonious. Just a tweet. You know what I mean? Like, I know they tweeted something out today, like, thank you for everything, friend.
That was it. Like, no context. Just thank you, friend.
Like, I don't know. Like, and honestly, like, if we're being honest with them, I was like, thank you for what? I don't know. Like, he's a nice player to have, but like, we're talking about, I guess, 300 games. All right. It seems like less than that, honestly. It seems like he just got here, but like, it was middle of 2020, obviously.
Yeah, well, he's middle 2019, right? Because that was a Trevor Bauer trade.
He was middle 2019. That's right. Okay,
he was the Bauer one, which was a total failure for everybody. I mean, the Reds got a Mickey Mouse Cy Young out of it in 2020 from Trevor Bauer. But that's about it. Everybody on the Guardians who was acquired was gone. Yasiel Puig, obviously, half a year. Scott Moss, Victor Nova, and then now Fernando Reyes is gone. So
that is funny. What a stretched out version of washing your hands of Trevor Bauer that is.
We're done. We're out of here.
We're done with you. Also, what we need from you is a quick 58 home runs and a 107. And you know what? And I think that's part of it too. Is honestly, like, he wouldn't play the outfield. And if you have a DH only guy, I'm not saying he has to be Yordan Alvarez, who literally has like a 200 OPS plus.
But you've got to be a dominant. You can't have a 69 WRC plus.
Right. You can't have a 120 OPS plus. Like that's like Naylor right now is at 130, but he at least is willing to play first and play the outfield. And his batting profile alone speaks to the fact that he's going to get better because he makes contact. He's like an 85% contact rate or something like that. And he hits it hard. So I don't know. I always liked Reyes. Frustrating player at times because he just would strike out in big moments all the time, it seemed like. But
yeah, and
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just gonna say that it seemed like he was more, it's hard to, obviously we can't know from out here, but he was more like front and center on the sideline and in the clubhouse kind of thing in previous years. And this year it kind of like faded to the back with other people coming up.
Yeah.
Like he never just emerged as the big clubhouse leader. Like in San Diego, like it always seemed like he had fun over there and then he was loud and boisterous. I think he was here at some times too, but it just kind of faded this year. I think Naylor, again, that's another thing. Naylor just kind of,
took all the energy, him, but, right? He did all the thing. Like, and you know, even you look at last year, 2021, right? You played 115 games. He's got hurt. He was worth 1.6 wins above replacement. I mean, I don't feel like your hit only guy can be effectively a prorated 2-win player and be a value, like a be a value add, I guess. If you have a DH who's doing that, then you just turn the DH into what the, I don't know, like what the Rays did with the designated hitter over a long stretch of years. We're just a place where you put position players for a half a day off, effectively,
which is what they're doing now because they don't have
a basically. DH, yeah, I mean they it's half Naylor because they're just trying to keep him off his feet sometimes, and then it's half Naylor, 1/8 give Jose a half a day off, and then figure it out from there, kind of a thing. But
and Zach Meisel even said it in an article that the coaches were saying it's a relief to have the open spot to shuffle whoever needs to go in there on the DH instead of just. Because obviously, have all these guys, you need to see what they have to hit. I think that's more valuable than whatever in the world Franmil Reyes was. But it was all just kind of weird. They could have left him in AAA. Like he had an option. I think he has another one, so they could have done it next year, maybe. At the very least, they could have done it this year. Like there's got to be something else going on that he just, I don't know, flat out refused to not be a DH, and they just didn't want to deal with it anymore. And also at the same time, they released Bobby Bradley, who wasn't even on the 40-man. This release.
Maybe they're just I don't know. I mean. We talk about that, and then we talk about the guys who they kept around, and maybe there's just a specific type of player they want, and it's not free-swinging, high-strikeout, low-walk guys, which, fair, honestly. Even I don't know, like everyone else, outside of basically Oscar Gonzalez, the guys, the young guys, even the guys who keep sticking around, someone like Owen Miller, who can't hit worth a damn, but he makes a lot of contact, which is why I'm so confident that he'll be good, but like, even, Oscar Gonzalez, you look at his batting, his batted ball profile, it equates to that of like a Tim Anderson kind of an, it's going to be luck based because he can't walk worth a damn. But I don't know, Reyes, who's just, his profile was not conducive to success because he didn't walk. He had one year we had an on base percentage over 2020, which is, again, a weird year. He had an on base percentage over 310, basically, or 320. And I don't know. It sucks to see a guy who has such amazing tools leave, but he doesn't fit.
The other tools are so bad, and they don't.
We're talking about a guy who's gonna be 28 next year, and like that is not where this team sees itself. And we can get into this in a bit, but as far as where the window is, but I don't know. Between something we don't know, but also what we can see with our own eyes, it honestly makes a lot of sense to get rid of a one dimensional guy who that one dimension he's. Barely above average at.
Yeah. If he wasn't up, like, I guess it kind of goes without saying, if he wasn't good for a couple of years, this would be a no-brainer. But the fact that he showed anything makes this weirder, considering they've had so much trouble finding power hitters, and now they do. But the good news is, on September 3rd, you can get his bobblehead. So if you're a big fan, I don't know what the hell they're going to do. I guess they just cancel it when he's officially on the Cubs. I don't know.
But he has a bobblehead. The bobbleheads over, they got to paint them all. That's what's going to happen,
Coming up, just change him to Ahmed Rosario. He has a beard.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
And he's a new power hitter. He hits the balls hard. So make it Ahmed Rosario.
Let's get one of those little label makers and just poorly put it on over Franmil Reyes. This is Ahmed Rosario.
There you go. No, no difference. So as you were saying, just figuring out the window of the Guardians and what they did and at the trade deadline was pretty much nothing. At the final hour, they traded Sandy Leon for reliever Ian Hamilton, who...
Game changer.
I mean... Looks like a mixture of Macklemore and Trevor Stephan, and I don't know how he pitches because he's just kind of a guy that's been in the Twins in their minor league system forever. It was basically a nothing burger trade. I wonder if it was just so they could not be with the Rockies as the only team to not make a trade at the deadline, but that's all they did. They didn't add, they didn't subtract, which I was kind of okay with. I wasn't expecting them to do much going in. Though the main thing I wanted to do was see what they could get for Zach Plesac if it was something interesting.
Yeah.
As we saw in his last start, I don't think teams were climbing over themselves to acquire him. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they heard some offers for Ahmed Rosario if they were shopping him. But I think at some point the scales of what you're willing to take and what he means to the team kind of tipped in the direction of you're not going to get enough for him anyway, so you might as well keep him. It's not like a Trey Mancini situation where they got a lot for him. You're not going to get much Rosario probably. He means more to the Guardians than he means to other teams.
Right, yeah.
I think it was. And apparently they made multiple offers of Sean Murphy, but the A's just flat out refused to trade him. Of course, now it looks like Bo Naylor is just bring him up already. He's ridiculous in the minors. He's hitting the ball so well. So maybe there's another reason they weren't willing to sell the farm for Murphy. But even if they were, they could do it this offseason. They could get him for if the A's are willing to trade him. So they did nothing. I don't know if it was a travesty. I think it's annoying that they didn't get anybody. I wanted to see. I mean, they're just such a weird spot because they're a young team. This is not supposed to be their team, their year to go for the playoffs, but it's in range. And if it's in range, usually you think you want to go for it, but they could also not and still be going for it because they're only a game behind the Twins. So it just kind of leaves them in a weird spot going forward, which could end up being good. Or if they lose the playoff race by like one game, this is all we're going to think about is they didn't do anything at the deadline.
Is a new guy on the 40-man roster?
I don't believe so. I think part of it.
Honestly, I honestly think that move kind of dovetails with the Reyes thing too. Like,
just
clear. I think we don't even think about, but like, because what's his name, Hamilton, right? Yeah, he's not on the 40-man, so
no, he's not.
They need so
to free roster clearing spot. Yeah.
Honestly, yeah, they just need to free some space up because like the Rule 5 draft's coming and they're going to lose some talent that we're probably going to run into down the road. But they need to keep some guys on the 40-man, and that's why I think why they're calling some guys up as well. But yeah, you know, it sucks they didn't make a move because we've been talking so about how rich the farm system is, and the whole reason you have a farm system is to make your major league team better. And I'm surprised that the A's didn't want to make a move. I mean, they're years away from
convention. Yeah, who knows what the hell they're doing?
I mean,
what are they keeping him for? Do they think like teams are going to suddenly be more desperate for a catcher in December?
That's the thing. Like, there's certain position. I mean, honestly, any position. I would say that starting pitching, relief pitching, and then like key defensive positions like that that I can also hit are the things that really can draw in just so much value at the trade deadline.
Because teams are going to be desperate, and you're like, this is another. All you're basically trading for is a playoff run, and you're taking away one playoff run by not dealing with the deadline. I don't know. It's so weird to not trade them on the A's perspective.
I mean, at the same time, we don't know what was offered. So maybe it was just a low ball offer. They kind of just like, hey, you guys want this for him? No, fuck off. Okay, well, never mind then. I'll see you later. I don't know. And I hope it's not a case of just Cleveland falling too much in love with his prospects and with its own kind of process of building young players because, you know, we've seen a few of them come up. Have they been world beaters? No. I will say that we've been having a nice little injection of a new young guy show up and kind of tear it up a little bit over basically all year. How that will work out over the long haul, I don't know. But especially because now you have all these young guys you can't find playing time with Brennan and Benson rather, and Freeman and Gonzalez and Jones. And
I mean, you can
like, count four guys right there.
He doesn't have the playing time, and there's too many outfielders.
Yeah, exactly. And like two of the positions, at least one. Well, you're not going to not play Kwan. I guess you could figure out if Stry is a fourth outfielder. Reyes is playing every day. Rosario is figured out every day. Jimenez is playing every day. And then what are you going to first base / DH guys who aren't Owen Miller? Like, I don't know. I would love to see all these young guys playing all the time. Jones and Freeman and Bench, just to see what they actually are. But at the same time, like you said, they're in contention. Like they're chasing something down. What that might be, I don't know. They could be in first place by the end of this week. Will they be? I don't know. We'll see.
It just, yeah, the Guardians don't have a hard schedule. It's the Tigers and then whatever parts of the team go to Toronto and play against the Blue Jays while the Twins play the Dodgers and whoever else they play.
But I don't know. I'm sad they didn't make some kind of move because they could definitely use, I mean, and they're not going to trade for a starting pitcher. They could probably use another relief pitcher. I know I like their bullpen all right. Class A, Morgan, Stefan, Henches, and De Los Santos, and even Sandlin, like I'm happy with all these guys, you know. Karinchak has come back and been great. And then you have Brian Shaw, who's also alive, which is, you know, good for him.
Brian Shaw does exist. The bullpen is just so much better. They stop using him so often. It's the worst thing. Like they have better relievers, and if they use Brian Shaw less, that's just you're upgrading your bullpen there. You don't even need another reliever. You just need to not use Brian Shaw.
Yeah.
Every damn game.
But like I don't know, like. I wish they had done something, but I don't know what outside of Murphy, I don't know what else that would have been because, and like you said with Bo Naylor, like maybe they just don't want to block him either. Like they tested the waters, it didn't work out, so they're gonna screw it, then we'll move on with our day. What the plan is for this year, I don't know. I'll probably be a little upset if they miss the playoffs by a game or two, but knowing, I guess, and I really hate like talking myself into that whole mindset of like, well, the team knows best and they're doing all the right moves and they're going to be long-term successful. And at the same time, I'm like, you know what I like? October baseball and championships. I've got some of that the last decade and none of the other ones. So please give me some of that. I just want to watch baseball that I care about in October. Being a, you know,
however you get there, just do it, damn it. That's all I want.
Yeah, just get, you know, and you know what? And win one game even, or win one series, or, you know, then I get sad. That's the issue. Cause then they won't win this championship and I get extra sad. So, you know, it's a real battle of emotions. I wish they'd gotten Murphy. I think that would have been such, it's like the Padres trading away, Hosmer. Not only are you getting rid of something that's dragging your team down, you're making that exact same position so much better.
Oh, that whole saga was awesome. Eric Hosmer was
truly incredible.
The only man in baseball that anybody cared about for a solid 2 hours.
I matter. And no, then you don't get out of anyway,
because they just threw in Luke Voit, so it didn't really matter. But
which, again, great addition.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And if I was Eric Hosmer, for what it's worth, like I would have done that. I'm not going to voluntarily go to the Nationals.
No, that team stinks, and it's hot here. It's awful here this summer. Like, I would want to play here.
That's why they paid him presumably less money, so he could have a no trade clause. So good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I hate you in baseball, but good for you.
Yeah, whatever. His leadership qualities, though, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Et cetera, whatever is there, you do it. But yeah, the whole thing with me with the trade then is like, I wish they would have done something, but if you ask me specifically what, I have no idea. Because other than Sean Murphy, I guess, like, who was the other pitcher? Maley from the Reds, which I don't care. I guess starting Brian Shaw and Hunter Gaddis, who was a train wreck. It does not look great after not trading for a starting pitcher. But also,
I liked what I saw out of Gaddis. I think
I think in a
different way, he's going to be effective the way McKenzie is, just because the way he's so huge and he has that high release point. And he throws it. He's got a decently hard fastball. And you mentioned the changeup and some other good stuff. Like, he threw a couple curveballs that looked nice. His slider is okay. I think there's something there. And it's not there now, obviously. But I wish they hadn't sent it back down. I was kind of hoping they could just... Who else are going to roll out there every 5 days? Savali's in the DL. No more Pilkington.
Well, Savali's coming back. And then I guess it's going to be Shaw as your fifth starter again.
Please, just put Hunter Gaddis out there. It's, what the hell? Like,
I mean, they started the poor guy against the Astros, so it wasn't
exactly literally the best offensive. Like, oh no, he did bad. Everyone else does bad, except like so did who started on Friday, right? Like, so did the whoever started or Saturday, whatever it was.
Yeah, it's. And I don't think he's only 24. Obviously, his first start. I think he can still be good. I think that when you have a changeup like that, I think you're going to be okay. Even if at some point he goes to the bullpen and he's like another Eli Morgan. I think Hunter Gaddis probably has too many good pitches to be shoved in the bullpen.
I think he's going to be like, – that's the thing. Like, yeah, it was Plesac who got bombed on Friday. So, like,
yeah.
Here's the line. Would he – do I think he'll be better than Zach Plesac in the long run? Yes. Do I think he'll be better than Cal Quantrill? Yeah, you know what? I do think he'll be better than Cal Quantrill.
All right.
I think that if you give him a full season of if you gave him a start every five games the rest of the season – I think he'd have an ERA in the low fours, and I think we'd be interested to see how it's going to turn out. Like, what is it, 3.1 innings against the best offense in baseball in your first ever start?
At least give him one more and figure out.
Like, give him one more. Give him one against the Tigers. Figure out, and then you figure out where the middle ground is. Best, worst? Okay, well, he's probably right here then. Yeah, all right.
If he's terrible again, then maybe you just got to shuffle him at AAA. Exactly. But if not, like, he's pretty good against a terrible team. So he's building. There's somewhere to go from that. I don't know.
But
I feel
bad that. Like with all these other young guys, he's just a huge dude. And we just need more of these guys.
I want to see that beard and hair in August and September when it's a million degrees and he's just sweating. So he's Cody wet. Allen again.
He'll be dumping water on his head, like in between innings, just dripping.
It's going to be amazing. Every pitch is
surrounded by a spray of water. The umpire's like, stop doing that so much. It's distracting. He's like, I'm too hot. You want me to die? Sorry, I got to stay cool out here.
This is the exact monotone, too. Do you want me to die?
What, do you want me to die? Where are you from, Georgia?
But yeah, I think I'll be back. I think that changeup is too damn good.
No. Oh yeah, and again, the fastball is strong, and like everything about him, just like his kind of 12 o'clock delivery. Like I think it's just so vicious. Like the ball's coming at you from like 7.5 feet up. Interesting pitches, and there was a reason they wanted to give him a chance out there. So, looking at his numbers as I see them as a major league pitcher, I'm ignoring them immediately. Looking at the minors again, I mean, it's not like he was amazing in the minors or anything like that, but there's a lot of tools there. And, I think they can build off that, and it can be an effective, even a front line, but you know, mid rotation starter.
I think we saw a lot of tools that were not on full display with some rookies this week. I guess Hunter Gaddis, that's we know what he is now. We don't know, but we've seen.
And I love him. We know he's great.
Has come up and not been great. He had 6 plate appearances, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts, no hits. He has looked utterly overmatched.
Scored a run, a game-winning run.
He did. Was it a run? No, because he was a ghost runner on second, right?
Yeah.
As his first game too. Yeah. What optimism and hope we had in the first game. It was wonderful. But yeah, he hasn't looked good. He's had a couple starts and he's looked bad in all of them. But again, like it's just kind of if there's any year to let him figure it out and try it and let's see some more pitches, I guess this is probably it. I don't know. I'm surprised he's even in the majors. Honestly, there was a while he kind of stumbled there, and I wasn't sure he was drafted 2016, and he's just now making it. And I'm happy for him, and I hope he succeeds. But it has been a rough start for Benson, especially compared to some other rookies the Guardians have had this year.
I mean, what are you going to do? You know, like he hasn't got any consistent starts, and he's just kind of thrown in there. And I don't know. I think of all the young guys we've seen this year, his is the hardest one to read because. Someone like Gaddis, it's just you see things even though he's getting, you know, pounded. Gonzalez, like I'm getting a good sense of who and what he is as a player. Jones, same idea. I don't know what to think about Benson because he's, again, we're talking about 11 at-bats over 6 games. And like 4 of those came in 1 game. So, yeah, he'll probably do bad. And also they were against good pitching. So, you know. I want to do good as well. He's a big dude, and I think he could be good. But I think we're gonna run this problem over and over, dude. Where it's just there's not enough plate appearances to go around, and he's just I don't know what to do about it because you know again 10 of his plate appearances came against the Astros.
Yeah,
4 of those came against, or 3 of those came against Justin Verlander. So what
yeah, his first start was against Justin Verlander.
Like, yeah, he said, hey, here you go, idiot. Oh.
Good fucking luck. Kick him out the door. Again, give him a chance against the Tigers. We got to get a range here. We got to get a gauge.
That's what I'm saying. We got to figure out where like, if we get the two polar, you know, the two poles, and we figure out the
science.
Middle.
This is how it works. Yeah,
we're doing science, everybody. Okay.
It's also worth. Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say. I mean, I think he could still be good. Like, it's hard to know because baseball is not a how good are you over 11 at bats in 6 games? It's how good were you over, you know, 70 at bats in 25 games, and then how good were you over 400 at bats in 100 games or whatever it is? And I don't know. He didn't hit the ball really hard, but he didn't not either. So.
I mean, did kind of not hit it a few times because he's gotten half his at bats. But
I will say this: his hard hit rate at 40%, it's higher than average. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Well, the opposite of him in a debut, I guess not opposite because it's not like Tyler Freeman has looked amazing. 2 hits and 11 plate appearances is not bad, but he's also walked. How many times is it already? It's only 2, but yeah, he's gotten on base quite a bit. That's an 18% walk rate.
Composed, I think, is what it is.
He looks more composed. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think just his approach in general lends himself to a more nice seeming, at least, start, yeah. Right?
He's very Stephen Kwan-esque. His,
right, exactly.
I think the way he goes about a plate appearance and the way his minor numbers have looked, he's very Stephen Kwan-y, which I think is what the Guardians are looking for right now. They need, obviously, power hitters, too, because you kind of have to, but they want more guys like Tyler Freeman and Stephen Kwan to come up. And, yeah, I think he's... I like him already in the short stint better than Gabriel Arias compared to like what I've seen with Arias in AAA and the very brief time he had in the majors. Like I'm on board with Freeman being the starting either shortstop or second baseman going forward. Not going forward, but after this year when he's settled in more.
Yeah, he has, I don't know. Just, like you said, I think his entire approach is everything that Francona wants out of a player. That's shitty, but I don't know. I have no other thoughts on this other than he could be good. I wish they'd stop getting... I wish they'd stop getting tiny little guys who hit the ball not hard, but, you know, constantly and kind of figure that middle ground out again. But maybe that's their growth pattern. Maybe they're hoping if one of these guys can turn into a second Josh Naylor. And he's not that small either, 6'1", 190. So
he does look small though. He plays. I don't know if that's a thing. Is it? Can you play small? He looks smaller out there than
I agree. Most players. No, I mean, you look at him out there. He's like, oh, there's a little guy out there. He's a little infielder boy.
Look at a little fella with the baseball bat.
But no, he's actually a normally sized human being. So I don't know. It's
I mean, when he's also hitting along like Nolan Jones and Will Benson and.
That's the thing, yeah. The shipment of big galoots we've had the last few weeks. It's just near Freeman sneaking in there behind everybody. You don't even see him until he's next to you.
That's going to do it for us this week, I think. A lot of rookies coming up. There will be more. If you haven't already, follow us on Twitter. It will be fun. At Cover the Corner, I am Matt, R-L-Y. Merritt's at Merrill Lunch, like Merrill Lynch with lunch. Obviously, coveringthecorner.com. I nailed it. When we listen to podcasts, leave us a review. Let us know what you think of the show. And Merritt, talk to you next week.
I'll be there.
Most of the time, we talk about tech in terms of a handful of gigantic companies like Google, Meta, and Apple. But some of the most interesting stuff we find online is the product of a single person.
When you're working on your own, I think there's this beauty of being able to come up with an idea and then implement it then in that moment. You don't have to have permission from someone else. There's no red tape.
In the Vergecast series, Solo Acts, we'll get to know these people, the tech they use to get stuff done, and the obstacles they face trying to compete with the giants.
Some people that I talk to and my friends are like, you know, your competitors are Zuckerberg and Musk. Like, aren't you kind of like afraid of that?
Every Monday, our friend Ashley Esqueda will be curating and hosting these interviews and sharing with us what she's learned.
I can't believe the McRib locator was originally a tornado locator.
Right.
Pretty wild.
Listen to our Solo Acts miniseries now in the Vergecast feed, anywhere you find podcasts.